Well, I want to welcome everybody, especially our new people. This meeting's a little different. We study the book and the information in it in great detail, and so that we may incorporate it into our lives and follow the path. Tomorrow night, we're finishing up step 10 and 11. If you have the handout, please bring it. And I'll have some other copies. We're going to read some great stuff summarizing step 10 and 11 for you tomorrow night. And if you're not on step 10 and 11, this information will help you as well, because it'll show you what the deal's all about. On Wednesday night, we are going to finish a vision for you. We're at different parts of the book for those who are new. And we're going to read page 164, which to a lot of us is our favorite page in the book. It summarizes everything. Every time I read it, I get a little emotional. It's powerful stuff. And that will finish our 10th time through the book on Wednesday. Then I'm going to do something a little bit different on after that, and it'll be a surprise. Today we are on the How It Works, and I call the first three pages that we're going to study in the next couple weeks the How It Works preamble. It's read at every meeting, I think, in the United States. I'm not sure. It's sometimes on a card. I had a lady who had been going to meetings for 2 months, and she went twice a day, and she came here, sweet, wonderful person, and I said, would you like to read How It Works? And she says, where's the card? And that just struck me, you know, that it's in the book. And it's on page 58, it's not the first page. And it got started that they read it every meeting in California. It was a man who ended up in Palm Springs, and he had a big book. And then he started a meeting, and they said, well, what should we do? He says, well, let's read How It Works. And then that's how, 1942 or 41, or in the early 40s. Book, remember, was written in 1939. And so that's how that got started, and then it spread all over. It's read everywhere. The problem I see when it's read at the meeting, I think it's great that it's read. I have no opinion one way or the other. But I'm studying the scriptures, and the important thing I'm learning from people who are teaching me is that you have to put everything in its context. And it's great to read How It Works at the meeting, but unless people can see where it is in the context, the significance may be lost. It's not page one, it's page 58. For those who have persevered on Saturdays with me, I look back, we started the book again on November 1st, and on July, whatever it is, 21st, we're starting How It Works, so we spent quite a bit of time. On the first 58 pages, we looked at the steps we took and carried this message to get here. And so the other thing is that how it works, I used to talk, what is the it? What is the how it works? I had another meeting. I'll just tell you funny stories. I went to this meeting and I talked about how honesty, open-minded, and willingness. And this guy reamed my butt, and he said, there's no how in AA, it's who. So I felt bad. You know, I'm a people pleaser. And I felt embarrassed in front of everybody. I thought everybody thought I'm stupid. Huh. And it might be true. And so I thought about it, and then I said, well, we read How It Works all the time, right, how. And if you turn to page 45, Jimmy's not here, so he'll forgive me. But on 45 in We Agnostics, they've told us on page 43 that basically there's no hope for us without God. If you're a real alcoholic, you have no defense. Now, what does no defense mean? It means no defense. Now, a lot of alcoholics think no defense means no defense but when I need it, I'll know it. You get it? And so no defense without a power greater than yourselves, without God. And then they start the chapter, We Agnostics, which is to change our idea about our relationship with God. And they talk about, on the top of page 45, I could wish to be moral, I could wish to be philosophically comforted. In fact, I could will these things with all my might, but the needed power wasn't there. I don't have the power to do better every day. I don't have power to relieve my bondage of sin, and I certainly didn't have any power not to use or drink. And it says, my human resources as marshaled by my will were not sufficient. They failed utterly. Anybody believe that? And so that was true for me, and that's going to get back to constitutionally incapable of being honest with ourselves, which we're going to talk about today. So then it says, lack of power was my dilemma. And a dilemma is two choices, especially undesirable. We had to have a power by which I could live. And it doesn't say you should find one or you may want to have one. It says you had to have this, and it had to be a power greater than you. And then here's the longest sentence in the book. Obviously, it has to be obvious to the person who gets to page 45 that they must have a power to live, that they couldn't figure out how to live. And not just not drinking. It doesn't say, I need a power not to drink. I need a power by which I could live. And if I live by my own power, then of course drinking will come in the equation. Obviously, it has to be obvious. But where and how are we to find this book, power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power that greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. And then we can talk about what our problem is. My problem was that I was living without God. And I was living in a world that I created where God didn't exist. He was there, but I just didn't let him work and acknowledge him. I ran the show. Yes. I made a mess of it, by the way. And it says, so where the power is in chapter to the agnostic. This chapter, we finished that. We spent a great deal of time on it. How we find the power is what this next chapter is about. How do I find a power to live? And starts out, the first paragraph is kind of a negative thing. Who won't do this? Now they've just finished at the end of page 57. It says, when we drew near to him, he disclosed himself to us. It also says at the top, God has restored us to sanity. So they're giving their testimony, and then they're going to talk in here about a negative way of looking at the solution, whether you're going to do the solution or not. And it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed our path. And a lot of people argue, why rarely? Well, rarely people who have thoroughly followed the path will fail. And why is that? Because they stop following the path. And that's more common than we think. And we don't have all the answers, so we don't know. But he talks about thoroughly followed our path, their path. Now, this book was written in 1939, so there was no big book. Now, I like to talk about the big book as the solution, and if you follow the first 102 pages and do what's in it, then you'll have what they have, and at least it's worked for me. But they didn't have the big book when they wrote this. Now, the path that they're writing about here is what was their experience without the big book. And they put it into words, and that's why they wrote this big book. Because without this big book, there was no path for me to follow. And I don't think we emphasize that enough at the meetings, that if you're here, we have a path for you. And the path is not going to meetings. Now, the meetings is good. But hopefully if you go to meetings, people tell you, well, you know, there's a path that you need to follow. If you're hopeless, you don't need to, but we suggest you do it if you don't have any other plan. We don't emphasize that enough. Now, the path that they followed was the Oxford Group and the Six Steps, but they also studied Scripture. They had quiet time. They did daily meditations. They had prayer time. That was very important. That was the fundamental thing of the early AA, because they only had one meeting a week. There were only three groups, and there were only about 60 or 70 people sober. And they had six steps, like I mentioned, and they had a way of staying sober. And so their path included the Book of James, the Sermon on the Mount, studying scripture. They had Oxford group materials that they read and studied on how, basically, how to submit yourself to God and how to destroy your self-centeredness. And so the path I talk about is the path to God, to a relationship with a creator that gives me a power to live. And they describe that on page 100 in Working with Others, and it's one of my favorite paragraphs in the book. I have quite a few favorites for those who are new. And here it is on that. It's the first says, page 100 says, my recovery is dependent upon my relationship with God. Anybody believe that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the path is how you establish a relationship with God. Now they talk on page 28, and I'm not going to have you keep going back and forth, it drives people crazy. But on page 28 it says, when you talk, you're supposed to describe. What you're really supposed to do when you give your story is describe how you established your relationship with God. That's what people want. People don't want to know how you drank and how you reached bottom. That's fun and interesting. But they want to know how you established your relationship with God. And this book is how they did it. And it says, both you and the new man, that means all of us, we're all new and old, we must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. And the path of spiritual progress is the path that they're describing on page 58. And notice it's spiritual progress, not perfection. And I'm on this group message site, and this guy said today, I just feel like if I don't do this perfectly, I'm going to drink again. And that's how some people see it, but it's progress, not perfection. And remember, on page 86, it says, at night I ask God's forgiveness, remember? And what corrective actions, and I don't get into morbid reflection, because alcoholics can get morbid reflection, so we don't beat ourselves up. It's progress. And as long as we're going in this direction and not going in this direction, God will be with us. And I must walk, and it says, if I persist, remarkable things will happen. And then I also wrote here, where are you walking today? What path are you walking down today? What are you doing to stay on the path? And what is your path? What's the goal of your path? And it says, when we look back, we realize the things which came to me when I put myself in God's hands were better than anything I could have planned. And that may be the best testimony that I can give a new person. That when I look back today on July 21st, 2018, and I look back that the things that came to me when I put myself in God's hands were better than anything I had imagined. Who would have imagined I'd be sitting here today studying and teaching the Big Book? And then here's the other thing that is I have to remember all the time, because this is the whole deal of the program. Follow the dictates of a higher power. Notice, not follow my dictates with the higher power. Follow the dictates of the higher power, and I will presently live. So right now, I will live in a new and wonderful world. I can do it right now at 9:42 a.m. Central Time in a new and wonderful world if I'm with God right this moment. And look at this, no matter what my circumstances. Now, I always had to have the circumstances work out to live in a wonderful world. But now my world is always wonderful if I'm following the dictates of God. So the path that we want is to form a relationship with God. It's spiritual progress. When I stay on this path and I look back, the things that happened to me are better than anything I could have planned. And I will live in a new and wonderful world all the time. So let's go back to page 58. And now you can see for the new people why it took us 8 months to get to page 58. But I hope that was helpful. It helps me to review. What am I doing? What am I trying to do every day? And it says, those who do not recover, look how it starts out. Rarely have we seen a person who fails. Those who do not recover. Now, there's the word recover. And they use the word recover in the big book. It says, this is the story of how 100 men and women recovered, not were recovering, recovered from a seemingly hopeless condition of mind and body. Now, they did have a hopeless condition of mind and body. Anybody else have that when they come in here? I still have it today if I rely on me. But it's seemingly because they wrote this book and they had a solution. And this is their testimony. And it says recover. So I wrote the process of, there's a process to recovering, the process of seeking this relationship to God. And I wrote recovered is the result. So the result of a seeking this path and following this relationship with God is to be recovered. And recovered means that I'm not in the bondage to self today, right now. And I'm not in bondage to the obsession to drink. It's a fragile condition. We went through on page 85 how you stay recovered. You have to be in fit spiritual condition. Because if I'm in fit spiritual condition, then I will relax sanely and normally to alcohol and other things. So those who cannot recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Now notice the word is program, not fellowship. Now people, I hear all the time, somebody will say, well, he's in the program. Well, I don't know what that means. You either are doing the program or you're not doing the program. You can't be in the steps. You're either doing them or not. That's just my thoughts. You can be in the meetings and be part of the fellowship and not in the program. I suggested that you do both. And it suggests on page 17 that just being in fellowship of people with common peril won't be enough. It won't keep you together and it won't save you. You have to have the great news, they said, is the solution that they offer in this book, the way out on which they all agreed. And so you have to give yourselves completely to this simple program. Now they're going to describe it from page 58 to page 88, what the program is. Up to page 58 is steps 1 and 2. And then on page 60, they're going to tell you why you need to make a decision in step 3 to give yourself to God and your life and your actions. And then the following is how you do that. 4 through 9 is how you get into the world of spirit with God. And then 10, 11 is how you stay there all day long. And so the result of the path is the world of the spirit. And then in 10, 11 is how you stay down that path. Now, I don't have that handout of the arch to freedom, but we're building an arch to freedom from the bondage of self. And the foundation is step 1, willingness. The cornerstone is step 2, believing there's a power. The keystone is step 3, the decision. And then 4 through 9, finish the arch, and then I walk through that down the path to freedom, and I'm with God in the world of the spirit. Now remember, this is a revolving path, so it can go backwards too. So it's always going like this. So if you're not keeping moving forward, you're going backwards. And that's the whole deal. So it says, usually men and women who are constitutionally capable of being honest with themselves. Now that's a powerful line. I've heard meetings on it. I've read about it. I've thought about it a lot. Now the constitution is the makeup of an individual. An individual's makeup, their constitution, what encompasses this individual. And it says, cannot or will not. So there are those who cannot and there are those who will not. And it says, constitution capable of being honest with themselves. Now the word honest is used 3 times in this first paragraph. So what does that mean? What does it mean to be constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves? Why did they put that in here? It's a strange way to start how it works, isn't it? Well, I think there's several things. And then when we open it up, people will talk about what they think it means. They talk about when the solution on page 25, here I go again, back and forth, back and forth. Well, it's important. It's in the book. I read this, and it says there is a solution on page 25. Notice they start again. Almost none of us like this. It says we have to self-search, level our pride, confess our shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. So it says, we saw that it really worked in others. So you come here, you see it works in others. And here's the deal. Had you come to believe in the hopeless and futility of life as you'd been living it? Therefore, if you've come to believe that, when you're approached by those in whom the problem is solved, there's nothing left for you but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. So you, if you have come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of your life, you can constitutionally see it. You can't deny it anymore. Remember, you became an alcoholic when you were crushed by a self-imposed crisis. Anybody else crushed? You could not postpone or evade. You had to face the proposition, God is everything or nothing. There was a moment when we're all crushed. And can you come to believe in the hopelessness of futility of life as you've been living it? Now, I think that's a gift from God. I think it's a gift from God, that moment of complete defeat. Not that moment where you're crushed 90%, you feel bad and things are bad. But when you're feeling crushed and you can see that, you can see the hopelessness and futility of life, and you can see how you had no power to fix this, then there's nothing left but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools. So people who cannot or will not do this program are people who are constitutionally capable of being honest with themselves. They cannot see the reality of their situation. They can't see the truth that they're completely defeated. They can't see the truth that they have no power not to drink. They can't see the truth that they can never manage their lives again. And some people can see it for a little bit, but they're constitutionally capable of sustaining that. It says they're not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They're naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. And so are you rigorously honest all the time that without God, you can't do this? Are you really honest that you need a power greater than yourself all the time, all day long? Are you completely defeated all the time on yourself? And you have to be able to see that to sustain doing the deal. Now, a lot of people are really constitutionally capable of being honest for a while, but then they stop. And I think they're trying to describe people that you'll see. Ed talked about one. You know they're completely defeated. You can see their life is, their situation is completely hopeless. They can even describe that, but they won't do anything about it. Anybody dealt with any alcoholics like that? I may have been that way at one point. We probably all were. And so why do some people give themselves completely and some don't? Why can some people have that moment of complete surrender and not? I think it's a gift. And I think everybody gets it at some point, but they move right through it. Or they'll get it for a while, that moment of grace, that complete humility, and then they'll be completely defeated, and then they just move right away. The ego rebuilds so quickly. And so I think that whether you can or will not are related together. If you will not or you cannot, why can anybody not do this? Have you ever seen anybody who cannot do this? Yes, they cannot do it. They seem incapable of doing it. And you say, well, what's the deal? Well, they're an alcoholic who can't give up oneself. And I think the moment of grace, the moment that my life changed, was when I could see, completely see, that I couldn't fix this. I had no power, and I got down on my knees and I asked God to help. To me, that's what hitting bottom is. It's a gift and it's grace, but then what do I do with it? And so it's a very interesting way, constitutionally incapable of being honest. Can you take the first step? Can you sustain the first step? Can you develop a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty? Now, some people said that means every time you speed, you call the police and you get a ticket. I don't think that's what it's about. Rigorously honest with yourself about the truth. And am I rigorously honest all the time, each day, when I'm separated from God? Can I admit that I'm separated? Can I admit that when I'm constitutionally capable of being honest, can I admit that I tried to wrest satisfaction, happiness out of life by managing it well? Can I constitutionally admit that I played God? Can I constitutionally admit that I made decisions based on self which caused me to be harmed? Here's a good one. Can I constitutionally admit that whenever I'm raw, angry, I'm wrong? Can I constitutionally admit to myself that whenever I'm disturbed, there's something wrong with me? You see, can I do those things all the time? That's what I think it means, the manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Can I see the truth? Now, I don't think I can develop that manner of living which demands rigorous honesty without doing the program. And then they're naturally incapable of grasping and developing this. There's something about these people that makes them different. Now, I think what they're really trying to say here is that they work, Bill W. worked with a lot of people. And they're in the asylum, they're on the streets, and they wouldn't do this. And he's trying to describe in this paragraph why people who are completely defeated won't admit it to themselves and won't admit it to God and another human being. And they won't just pick up the book and read it. It's perplexing, isn't it? Now, the thing that we have to be is we have to understand that that's us. And we could be that way. I could become constitutionally incapable of doing this by changing my mind and changing the way I see it. So maybe this is you have to let go of your old ideas completely, right? Or the result is nil. And one of my old ideas is that I have any power to fix or manage my life. So I love this paragraph. It says, there are those who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. So how they can go through the process of recovering, they can have the result. Do you have the ability to be honest? So the whole deal, the first paragraph of whoever is completely honest and capable of seeing the truth and letting God help them see the truth and sustain that relationship with God that helps you see the truth all the time, then you can get to page 88 and you can be in the world of the Spirit. So the only thing blocking you from it is you. And are you willing to let go? Are you willing to see the hopelessness and futility of your life?
Yes.
And so I've seen people who can tell me about it. They'll describe their hopeless and futile life. And then I'll say, well, I'll listen to doctor's opinion and call me the next day. It's 30 minutes. I even show them on the site where it is. Because, you know, they're alcoholics. It's a complicated site. And I say, this is it. 30 minutes, read the book, call me tomorrow. They don't call. I say, why didn't you do it? Well, you know. And I said, you know, that's the whoever told you not to do it is the same person who's going to tell you to drink. And so we talked about last week, Linda and a few others, how we have this voice in our head that we listen to our whole life. So am I constitutionally capable of seeing that that voice is bad? Steve said it brilliantly. His whole problem was your thinking, your whole life. He's sober 34 years. I love him. He was a mess for 34 years. And do I listen to my thinking anymore? Do I believe it? And so am I constitutionally capable of seeing that my thinking is wrong? It's not true. And then a life of rigorous honesty is to say to myself all day, well, you're wrong, Michael. Your thoughts are wrong. Don't pay any attention to yourself. And I do that when I get fear. I say, stop it. Stop it. It's ridiculous. I'm not going to waste another minute on fear. Anybody waste a lot of time on fear? Well, I'm almost 68. I've wasted a lot of years and moments on fear. So now I get mad at myself when I even begin to get afraid. I say, stop. Stop, Michael. You're a mess. Anybody get angry? Anybody judge? Any judges in the room? Anybody judging me right now? Good luck. Enjoy it. Here's the thing. If I judge, I'm playing God. I don't feel good. And then I have to say, you know, we're all God's kids, right? We're all, and so being constitutionally capable of being honest with yourself is, can you see the truth of a situation with God? And are you willing to seek God so you can do that? So it's a very complicated paragraph. I'll open it up. I've rambled a lot, but it's important to see how they put this first, and then the rest of the program follows. And so we'll be looking at that over the next weeks and months. Thank you.